Hello, humans. Hello, humans. Okay, let's see. A little disorganized today. And 18th. Going to talk about Stephen Greer. Penny Kelly, Boston University. And Corey Good. Yeah, that one shot. Okay, so we're coming into some, well, no, we're in strange times at the moment. The reason I'm sort of moving a little slow is I've been working really hard in my big clean here that goes along with the big ugly that's happening in the outer world. So as the world gets ugly and stupid, I come on in and clean is just what I do. And I decided to go through and review every damn thing I own here and get it all skookum, right? Try and clean up my action relative to the rest of the world. So in that sense, I'm attempting to get every damn dollar I possibly can out of any financial institution that I think is shaky, and I think a lot of them are shaky. It appears as though, according to Catherine Austin Fitz and the activities that are emerging so far, that we're going to have the Fed defend the dollar, not the banks. So last time, 2008, we had an issue, or we had the resolution of the crisis that was created by the mother weffers, the bankers at that time. The resolution of the crisis was the defense of the banks by raping all of the people in the United States through Congress and the bailout, right? And there's some possibility they were saying that now we can still have, all right, so now the solution is going to be that they're going to save the dollar, quote, save the dollar. It won't work. They'll cause great amount of problems and troubles, but they will extend for some period of time, some marginal small amount of time, they will extend the usefulness of the Federal Reserve note, the FERN, against other fake currencies on the planet for some small period of time, and it'll end very abruptly, and they'll be fucked and done, right? But what they're going to do is to keep raising rates. Now, in the 70s, we had mortgage rates that were like 18% and 19%, variable, adjustable on top of that. It was hellacious. I think the prime rate at one point was over 20%. Serious damn problems on bleed out of purchasing value. That's why, along with that, in order to support that, that's why they shifted manufacturing offshore to provide cheap goods by Chinese slaves in order to extend the dollar. And so now they're going to do this. They're going to try and defend the dollar, defend the fern, and they won't care about what fails. They won't care about what crashes, which means the banks are going to come down, unlike the last time, right? And so we'll see major banking failures. I think it will stop at the very, very, very small regionals, right? I think the small regionals, there's many of those that may be sound enough to survive this crisis. Credit unions are probably, especially isolated individual kind of credit unions, not regionally associated, are probably reasonably sound, right? But my point now is I need to clean my act up relative to the degradation around me, especially of the banking system. And so I'm trying to get dollars out of the bank and put them into stuff that's effective, right? Like, so that's why I'm going through in this big clean and reviewing all my preparations, reviewing everything I've got. If something is marginal, I'm going to replace it, trying to get 15 years of life out of whatever material I have here, right? And so I'm proceeding on the assumption that I'm potentially going to be dealing with supply chain disruptions for on the order of 15 years. And many of the things I might want to acquire over those next 15 years may not be available if they exist now and would be transportable through time through storage, then I'm looking at that issue right now. You know, so like my pressure cooker was a little, is old. So I got a new pressure cooker. And so it dawns on me at that same time, oh, I may have to do my own food preservation in the future if supply chains get this wonky. So I got myself a, you know, a steam canner, right? So I can do pressure canning as well as just regular water bath canning. Those kind of things. So that's what I'm doing now. It's part of this big clean. It's very refreshing in terms of a big key feeling, right? And cleansing the mind of worry and examining all of this. And at the same time, I'm getting rid of tons of stuff and whittling down all the crap I've stored that I just won't get around to using. Now, my plan for going forward into the future in this period of time of disruption and financial and so on chaos is to be decentralized and distributed in my activities as well as my assets. But in order to do that, as I was saying, I had to get balanced. I had to look at all of the stuff that I had stored and ascertain whether it's going to do well, especially in this environment with all the salt air and the ions and so forth. So that's where I'm at now. I'm going to continue with this big clean. That's why I'm writing it in big letters, big clean, because I've got going through the whole house, going through everything. As I encounter stuff, I put it right and get it organized and move on to the next one, right? And I will come back and revisit some things that would be too time-consuming to go through at a minutia level now, and I'll just do that later in the winter when we're socked in here by giant storms and I can't get out and so on, right? I'll just dart over to the office and maybe sit here and sort all of my vitamin supplies, that kind of thing, right? Maybe I'll alphabetize them, who knows? But they won't be in a big, just thrown into a big bin. Anyway, so in my big clean, I'm thinking. And during this period of time, working in the office here, even to a certain extent, working out and about on the property, because I've got multiple parts of the big clean, right? So I'm repairing tractors and all of this kind of shit. thus the dirtiness. But this is a coast, so fuck it. You know, it's come as you are, right? Anyway, so during this period of time, I'm listening to, mostly listening, not watching. Occasionally, I'll come and watch to see if there's some nuance of facial expression I need to see. Maybe I'll watch these videos, but mostly I'm listening to videos. So I've been listening to a shitload of videos about a variety of subjects here, some of which are quite interesting. But I'm not going to go into most of those, but I am going to bring up some salient points about some of the things that are going on that I've run across here. Recently, I have to add another one here. I think the guy's name is Freaks. I think it's Charlie. Anyway, so I gotta get back to my big clean. So I want to just step through this relatively quickly. So there's a really good video with Stephen Greer talking to this guy, and I apologize for not knowing his name. He does toe theory of everything discussions on YouTube. You can probably just put in TOE and Stephen Greer in like the last week or so, and it would show up. You'd find out who this guy is, and he has lots of really good interviews. Physics mainly, science, UFOs, some woo stuff. But anyway, the one with Stephen Greer was really quite exceptional. In terms of, I like Greer. He's a controversial figure, aren't we all? But I like listening to his voice, right? There is so much that is conveyed in the multiplicity of the depth of his voice. So I actually think, I could probably find out if I analyzed it, that I think he's got that same vocal condition that JFK had, where there were these two registers that were effectively missing, and it gave the tonal quality of his voice a very unique and powerful aspect. So I think Stephen Greer has something of that in his voice. But nonetheless, my point in dealing with him was, in bringing him up even, is that this is a woo-woo guy, right? This is a guy that talks about UFOs and space aliens and all of that, and he's consumed with it, yet he comes from a background of science, although, you know, allopathic science, right? And that's my point. Okay, so it is Dr. Stephen Greer. I think he was also at one point an administrator for a company that did urgent care, right? In any event, though, so he has science in his background, and he's observant, and he's also a woo guy. And I'm listening to this interview and going along, all of a sudden a hard stop, because it dawns on me what he's saying. So Stephen Greer buys into the idea that there is an existential threat to the planet because of human activity. And so Stephen Greer's whole thing on this video was he's got this new project coming out, and this new project is all about these suppressed technologies going back hundreds and hundreds of years that could free us and eliminate this existential threat. So in other words, it appears that Stephen Greer believes in this the climate change hoax, right? So you got to be careful. Because it is a hoax. There's no activity that humans are doing. So let me just stop and put it to you this way. Here, I'm going to have to do some quick little counts here. Hang on a second. Okay, so the amount of energy that humans use, all humans, on a year is less than the amount of energy that falls on our planet from sunlight alone in an hour. So our whole giant humans, all of our human energy use is nothing, truly nothing, compared to the energy that is falling on the planet. And so even if we were to use, even if we were to burn wood in the crudest possible fashion to get all of the energy that we use on the planet, we could not cause climate change in the sense that it's defined by the mother wefers, right? We're not going to harm the planet. There's no existential threat from humans. Humans are, our existence is constantly under threat, especially now with the mother wefers. I'm just pointing out here that in spite of Stephen Greer's analytical ability and his observational skills and conclusion-making skills, etc., he still has gotten suckered in by this. Now, I went to the trouble of buying all of the U.S. Weather Bureau's data going back fucking forever, for as long as there's been records kept here in the United States. I also bought geophysical records from for temperature and so on from England and from other places. I wrote a quick little C program that opens up the file and just hunts in regions and by years for the first appearance of a 95 degree or higher day. And I actually had to drop that down to 90 degrees because the data was too shocking and it was an abrupt skew. So 90 degrees or higher, the first 90 degrees Fahrenheit or higher day, when did that occur in the year? And then the total number of them and the spread of how far they spread throughout the year. And I did this in areas that were 22 degrees latitude and higher or 22 degrees latitude and lower in the case of the physical year, because I got some data from, you know, like 100 plus years of data from South America. And I discovered that relative to temperature, we're declining. That it is true that we're not having as many 90 degree plus days on the United States, on North America, as we did 20 years ago. And even that, those 20 years ago, those number of 90 degree days was far less than we'd had in the 60s. So spread across just even my lifetime, we're entering into a cold period. So if it's climate change, we need to start burning more oil and creating more heat in order to actually try and cause an effect, because humans are not in any way heating the planet up. When these people say climate change, I want to say, yeah, right, okay, and basically get the fuck away from me, because your mind is shot. You're a tool of the mother weffers, and your mind's been corrupted. So I'm just pointing out that even the sharpest among us will have biases that allow us to fall into traps like this. And so part of the thing with yoga and Zen and all of this business is that you're supposed to maintain this plateau, especially with yoga, not so much with Zen, which is more about the experience in the moment. But with yoga, the idea is that this improvement through time, and the underlying idea of that, and to a certain extent Buddhism, is that you're going to get into a mental state that would prevent you from backsliding, so to speak, right, and falling into traps like this. So even though you're really smart and you're getting more educated and you know about UFOs and stuff, you still buy into the mother weffers idea of climate change, because it is so pervasive and they're constantly dumping this shit on you. You can't get away from it. It's in the movies, it's everywhere. So my wife and I fight all the time, because I will not watch movies with hidden agendas in them, especially when the agendas are not that fucking hidden. And all these movies on like Netflix are all about, climate change and apocalyptic weather shit and all this kind of crap, right? None of which can ever happen, and I'm not going to pollute my mind with that. So anyway, so point number one, Stephen Greer, the best of us fall into these traps, right? And you have to constantly watch yourself. I fall into this shit all the time. Usually it's not, doesn't last very long. I don't make many conclusions off of it. Just too wackadoodle, I guess. Anyway, though, so that was that. Now, Penny Kelly. So Penny Kelly had a video out. I don't usually have time to watch all these videos, right? So anyway, Penny Kelly had a video out recently, and it's her look and see thing, right? Look and see thing. When she basically does what we can think of as a remote viewing, trying to see the future, which I think mostly you're just going to be probing your own mind and doing that without any kind of an external trigger or prompt or source. And it's a wasted exercise. This one was interesting because of something that I don't think she knew she said. Okay, so at 13 minutes into this look and see of hers, she talks about how the banks are going to be failing over this next period of time, and that they're going to come out and they're going to offer I don't remember if she said crypto or digital solution, but they're going to offer a solution that she accurately describes. And then she describes what's going to happen and people rejecting that solution. And she says it's not going to fly. Okay, so what the banks will proffer to us will not be accepted by the people. It will not fly. Now, I agree with her. Okay, so I'm not disputing what she's saying as a potential in this small, narrow regard to her look-see thing. All right, just the financial stuff. None of the rest of it at this point. And I haven't even listened to all of it, because I got more work to do. And you walk out of the building and you come back in and you miss some. And it's like, oh, I don't know where I was. I just stop it and go on to something else. Anyway, though, but I happened to catch her talking about banks and their solution and stuff. Now, the nature of this is that she describes in here accurately, she describes XRP. And then she says it won't fly. But she's been pimping XRP as being the solution to the Swift and it's supposedly, according to a lot of woo-woo people, it's going to go take off when the SEC drops their suit against it, which SEC and suits, it's just another huge ball of corruption wax. But anyway, and supposedly XRP is going to be a replacement for Swift. Now, bear in mind, okay, SWIFT is more than a money transfer thing. It has other capabilities in it, but it is primarily used for transferring money between the banks. So, a couple of things here. XRP only has one customer, and that's the banks. If the banks fail, there's nobody to buy XRP shit or use it. So it's not like it's real crypto. XRP has a what they claim is a consensus algorithm. You can go and look at its code in GitHub. It's not a consensus algorithm, in my opinion. It is centralized. You can run nodes, but you're not really effectively adding anything to the mining potential of XRP because it's not really mined. It's doled out through this central system that is within the code. You can see it, right? And its only use is as a bank messaging system. So, it's the third tier. Okay, so this is not Coke. XRP is not Coke in the marketplace here for banks. You know, the banks are not drinking XRP as Coke. They're not drinking XRP as Pepsi. It's not even Dr. Pepper. Okay, it's so far down on the chain. There's three above it trying to be replacements for Swift. All three of those above it are much better positioned and much better designed and all of that to actually do a replacement for Swift than XRP, in my opinion. So in my opinion, when you look at XRP, that's the Dr. Pepper. Okay, not even Dr. Pepper. It's Mr. Pibb. Okay, Mr. Pibb. Pop or some off regional brand, and it's never going anywhere. But she accurately describes it and then applies this phrase of it will not fly and it'll fail. So she's saying her RV stuff is she's seeing these things crap out. And I don't think she realized that she described XRP, which she pimps. So, you know, you got to be careful about what all this what people are putting out here on this kind of stuff. And you shouldn't believe me on any of this. You should do your own damn research and not blame me when you get fucked up on stuff because you misinterpreted it. Okay, so Boston University has come out and they claim to have done an attachment of the spike protein to the coronavirus shell in such a way that they have created an 80% lethal version of COVID. Okay, so that's what they're claiming, is that they've got a version of COVID that kills 8 out of 10. Oh, it's terrible. It's just horrid shit here. Okay, so let me get that. And so that's what Boston University is saying. They've got an 80% lethal COVID. Well, you got to read this shit, right? You can't believe anything you see, especially the headlines. And yes, that is 100% true. That's factual. Boston University has why they did it, I don't know. Who paid for it, I don't know. They've attached a spike protein back to a coronavirus shell and created a new form of COVID that is 80% lethal in one narrow group, okay? And this 80% lethality is existent in a group of genetically bred vitamin D deficient mice. Okay, so here's the takeaway. These are not just regular mice. These are not mice you might catch out in the field or something. These are mice that are genetic experimental mice, and these guys are bred with vitamin D deficiency built into them. Okay, so that's all that is. Doesn't apply to humans at all. We're not mice. If you have vitamin D in you, the spike protein can't get into you because it'll be destroyed in your mucous membrane areas by the vitamin D being used as a key element, a giant key in your immune system. And so you can't assume that these fuckers know what they're talking about. So a couple of other things here. The spike protein's earliest appearance is in the 1980s through the 90s in mad cow disease. Okay, and it showed up in the UK, actually Scotland, first. The supposition, the bullshit story is that the spike protein came down and drifted down on these with these prions from space in ice meteorites, landed on the hills in Scotland, which aren't that very big hills. They're not really mountains, you know. And then the cows ate it, and they got the stuff. Okay, maybe that happened, right? But in any event, that's where we see our first. If you go and scout through the literature, this is where you first start seeing spike protein stuff start popping up, right? So we've been dealing with it since the 80s and the 90s. So that's point number one. So the spike protein is deadly. The coronavirus shell has extreme vulnerability to vitamin D. So it cannot be a delivery mechanism and get it into you if your vitamin D is adequate. Not even robust, just adequate. You're not going to be ill from the coronavirus, and you won't get this the spike protein in you. That's why they had to put the spike protein in the shot, because that's the only way they could kill off all of the people they tried to kill off. And so that's where we're at now. There are new problems showing up with the... okay, so let me back up a second. All right, so... The injection of it is what causes the spike protein to get around your immune system and get in you and fuck you over. That's causing a whole slew of problems now that we're seeing some really bizarre shit. One of the things that's now coming in is rapid onset blindness. And so we're getting a lot of people that are relatively young that are suddenly growing blind. Now, I think it's a precursor to a very early death. And this is a very sad state of affairs. But here's the thing on that. Some of these effects with the spike protein will be able to be dealt with. So I'm of the opinion that the type of blindness that's affecting these people probably could be staved off and or recovered by getting the spike protein out of the optical system by way of ivermectin, which binds it and helps get out of it. So I think there's some level of hope for some of the symptoms, but it was never a good idea to get the spike protein injected into you. Now, this is another one of my opinions. You don't have to believe it or trust it or anything, but here's the deal. I went through the Columbia University virology course when all this COVID shit started off. I mean, it took the whole fucking course. I also took a molecular biology course at the same time to fill in gaps in my knowledge so that I would better understand virology. Virology course, in my opinion, is just filled with unsupported assumptions or poorly supported assumptions or assumptions that are supported by data that I assume that I think is corrupt. And so I don't think virology works the way that the virologists understand it. And I think that they're... ignorance and their assumptions have allowed all kinds of proliferation of bad information and bizarro ideas. So there is an idea that I've dealt with since the 1960s. So my dad went through the War College in Leavenworth, Kansas, and I didn't like Leavenworth. It's an okay place, but it was shit in the 60s then. But anyway, so the USR or Department of Defense. In the 1960s, in the War College material, I was bored. It took my dad a while, like 8 months, to go through the course there. I read all of his material because the library was pretty poor at the time. We didn't have internet, and I went through that library real quick. And in fact, I'd read most of the stuff that was there anyway, in terms of, you know, age-appropriate material. So I started getting into the War College material, which was age inappropriate, but it didn't matter much. Anyway, the War College in the 1960s was of the opinion that by the time we reached the 1980s, so only 20 years ahead of the time that they were writing this, they were anticipating that we would get into the point where we would have biological warfare, and no one would deal with chemical warfare, and no one would even give a shit about nukes, because biological warfare would just be so fucking terrible to deal with, all right? And it didn't happen. They were working and spending. And so in the 1960s, in the War College material, it talks about all the efforts and all the black projects in the United States to come up with lethal bioorganisms to go and kill our enemies, but not kill us, and how to deal with it, and all of this kind of shit. It was very scary stuff to read. And we got a lot of movies about, like, Outbreak and this sort of thing that piggybacked on some of that kind of material. And the military had set up a large investment. DOD made a very large investment through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s into biological warfare. And it started trailing off in the 80s because it is not proving out. And so it is my opinion, having read all the War College material and then having gone through the virology and having gone through the biomolecular biology course, that it may not be possible. And so the idea that, so there's a lot of fear around the subject of DNA specific, you know, genetic specific bioweapons. So in other words, you could get a bioweapon that would go and kill, you know, only black people or only Russians or, you know, only Lithuanians with green eyes, that kind of thing, because you'd work at a DNA level. DNA does not work that way. We don't understand DNA. The proof of the pudding in this is that all the biome companies that were doing the genome decoding that had been pumped up in the 60s and 70s with all kinds of venture capital all went bust. They didn't deliver. You know, they thought at one point that we would have understanding of DNA and you could get skin scraping off of somebody, go and pop it into a machine, and an hour later come back and tell this 12-year-old kid, okay, you're going to die of such and such a disease at age 88 unless you're hit by a car. You know, because that's what they were saying, is that, you know, theoretically you could predict all this with DNA, which, no, none of that shit's happening. All those companies went bust. So the markets proved that their assumptions were bogus, that we don't understand, and here's something else. So people will tell you all kinds of shit about DNA, but when you actually get into looking at it, when you do the alleles, it's called, and you do this electrophoresis process, which you shoot electricity through the proteins in order to get the DNA to flatten out and spread out on this gel substance, DNA shows up as this little, let me get another color there, and I'll just do it as a, like this. Okay, so DNA shows up as these, in your display, is something like this, right? Is all this information and all these lines that, and we're talking really micro fine. So there would be several, well, there'd be 40,000 of them in the display. So you'd have at least 40 K's worth of data in the display right there for the genes. The issue is, for all of us, is that what a gene is not decided. So you've got some companies that are saying that, you know, this area right here over to there and that area right there is a gene. And a gene has this many elements in it. You got other companies saying, no, that's bullshit, that you can't start here, that gene has to start over there. It's got to have these extra two elements and so on. So all these companies are fighting about what an actual gene is. There's some quasi-supportable information about genes relative to DNA and crimes and stuff that you can say that, yeah, the probability is that kid there is this woman's son, right? You can have that kind of relationship, but it's only a probability. And it gets really wonky when you start actually getting into the details of it. A lot of it disappears in terms of your certainty. So DNA is one of those things where you drill deeper into it, the more you get uncertain about the results you've gotten so far. And again, it's proven by the genome companies going bust. They're not doing tailor-made, anti-disease things based on your DNA. Most of that effort is crapped out. I've got lots of history, economic history on that, showing that it just doesn't work. So I'm saying that from my understanding here and my understanding now of our immune system and our COVID experience, that because they actually did, they put the spike protein onto the virus and we were all exposed to it, right? And it didn't kill us all. 99.997% survivability rate when they thought maybe it would be 50 or 60% lethal. Remember, they were projecting hundreds of millions dead from COVID. Never happened. They were saying that maybe, you know, a third of the country here in North America we'd be wiped out by COVID. Did not happen. In England, look at the projections of the lethality rate when this shit popped off. That was all based on these army studies and stuff because they knew they were dealing with a bioweapon. Their problem is their assumptions are bogus. So COVID, as far as I understand it, was done at Chapel Hill, North Carolina, went to Canada, went over to Ukraine, and from there Ukraine to Wuhan to be released. But from my understanding, from the Chapel Hill, North Carolina studies, they were working with source DNA that was Chinese. The Chinese people are the most vitamin D deficient people on the planet. By culture, they avoid sunlight and they don't supplement. So no wonder they expected a very high lethality rate. Anyway, so I don't think it's possible to do, at this stage anyway, any kind of genetic tinkering with diseases that would produce an 80% lethality rate in humans under any circumstances other than a direct injection, because the human immune system is so robust and so variable. And if everybody's immune system were pumped up by the appropriate amount of supporting material like vitamin D, you're that much better. Just my opinion, right? I don't have any degrees. I got no credentials to offer you, to you. You can take that opinion and, you know, swing it around and see, throw it and see if it sticks on a wall or whatever, and chuck it away. But that's just where I've come to think about all of this shit over time. Let's see. So with specialized mice, we don't have the ability to make these super lethal bioweapons, in my opinion, at that level. And this is what's frustrated Bill Gates. There's another thing too. There's a practical out and about, right? We know the mother wefers are evil sons of bitches. I mean, terrible, terrible, terrible bastards. Kissinger was talking in the 1970s when he invented the petrodollar in 1971. By 1973, he was talking about the introduction of forced vaccines through compliance, not through actual guns up to your head. And that as soon as they did that, they'd be able to engineer us all and this kind of thing. And that they would get there by releasing a terribly deadly, or we would have a terribly deadly impact as humanity with a virus that would be a giant pandemic, right? So we know these motherfuckers are really evil. So if they could produce an 80% lethal any fucking thing to get us, they would have released it a long time ago and been done with us. So it isn't going to happen. You don't have to worry about that level of it. Yes, they're evil and they want to kill you, and you got to worry about those mothers, but they're really stupid and they can't get it together on this side of it. Okay, so there's that. Now, Boston University. Okay, so Corey Good. Okay, so Corey Good recently came out and said it was all channeled. He channeled it. Okay, it never fucking happened. All of his years trying to sell that shit through Gaia, it never fucking happened. And so he sued me and Jay Widener and this guy under the name of C.W. Chanter, he sued us as part of his suit against this other suit against Gaia that brings Gaia into it again. But he sued me for saying on the internet that I didn't believe his bullshit story, that it was bogus, and here's why I thought it was bogus. And every time he brought it up, I would put out there, I thought it was bogus. And he maintained it was factual, and he told all of his supporters through Twitter and other social media that just wait, the sheriff's going to come and take away Cliff High, he's going to take away Jay Widener, he's going to take away CW, and they're going to be run up on criminal charges after we prove these civil charges via RICO, right? So he was telling his supporters that I was part of a criminal gang and he was going to have me arrested and so on through this RICO thing. I actually have in Washington State, I have the ability to sue him for slander and defamation, right? And may yet do so because I can do it as pro se, so it won't cost me anything. But here's the thing, this is my point. So now, it was 2+ years involved in the lawsuit that I was dealing with him over his bullshit information. It's bullshit. I mean, channeled, you cannot, he said it never happened, and it came out of him sitting in his living room. He's never been off the planet. He never went through time travel. He was never abducted by my labs. He was never abused. He was never trained by the military, never had these bus rides. All the details are bogus. It was all channeled, okay? Yeah, right. Anyway, but he sued me, he threatened criminal action, he brought a RICO case through its civil side against me. That's if you can't get the authorities to deal with a gang, you can sue the gang and under RICO, bring out all the illegal things they're doing. And then at the end of your trial, when you win your trial, maybe even if you lose, but if you brought out a sufficient fact, then the authorities are placed in an interesting position, because if they don't prosecute, they can be prosecuted if you've already proved in court that these people were doing illegal things via a civil RICO case. And so then the law enforcement could bring a criminal RICO case, and that's what Corey was saying was going to happen to me. Plus, he sued me for $5 million, and he cost me a bunch of money through my being stupid. That was really my stupidity, because I hired an attorney. I should have just gone pro se right off the bat and gotten in there and just twisted his guts really hard. But my whole point about all of this is that I suspect that there's well over $1 million in legal fees involved in just the case that I was dealing with. To say nothing of the other case that Corey had to be deposed under, and in that deposition the other day said that he channeled it, that it didn't happen, it was channeled material. Okay, because he's got a court case against his former business partners, and maybe Gaia too, I haven't paid any attention to that one. And anyway, it's all about contractual shit. But in there, in deposition, he said it was channeled. So in my case then, so should he apologize? Should he say, now that I recognize that my mind was warped and it was all channeled material, I apologize to these guys that I sued erroneously, and I'm going to do everything I can to make it right with them? Yes, he very much should do that. But we won't get that from him because he's a fucktard. He's a, you know, a low intelligence, low information, low morals kind of person, in my opinion. And his actions, in my opinion, demonstrate this. But This is something I'm bringing up. The court was in a nasty position. If we put in all the court time as well, because the court is in a position of helping the attorneys cure a case. So in other words, court procedures are so complex that if your attorney has not had that much experience in pursuing those types of cases, the court feels an obligation to render them assistance, to help them correct their language, to make that a much better suit. So I had to suffer through that curing process 3 times in the suit that he brought against me, where they had to reword it, because every time I replied to all of her shit, I blew her out of the water as all of her stuff as being bogus, right? Anyway, so there's this thing, Rule 11, in procedures, and it has to do with attorneys and their obligation to not bring forth bullshit cases. So she had an obligation to tell Corey Good, you're going to lose, your case is bullshit, the court won't want to hear it, it's going to waste, because she's an officer of the court, it's going to waste the court's time, and I don't want to put my career at risk by pursuing your case. This is my opinion. She had that obligation. She should do that. She should, in my opinion, as I repeatedly told the court, be censured under this rule for bringing forth all this bullshit from fucktard Corey Good. I doubt that'll ever happen. The courts are in a weird position with fucktards like Corey and stupid attorneys that he hires. Anyway, so we now know it's channeled. We now know it's all horseshit, that none of that crap happened. So now there's all kinds of questions. Are other people going to get on his case? What about all the other people that stole his material? Now he's said it's channeled and didn't happen. He can actually claim copyright on it. And so they're fucked. But he has to get up in court and said, I invented this and they stole it from me. Yeah, they stole it from me when they thought it was real and when I was maintaining a lie that it was real. But nonetheless, now I'm said it's an invention, I'm copywriting it and claiming this, and they have to give me all the money they made off of it. He could do that. It wouldn't happen, wouldn't work, but... So the court case is going to get really interesting now in terms of what the court is going to do, because they've wasted a lot of fucking money, a lot of attorney time, a lot of person's times on what he now says is a bogus cause for the case that he brought, because he was maintaining the entire time that it was legit and that I was telling lies about his material, which is not true at all. I was analyzing his material and saying, here's the holes in this stupid freaking story. And I got sued for it, but you know, this shit happens and there's retribution. So it'll come down. We'll see some of the changes in the court here fairly soon, I think, about this case with us. Now that the other case about the contract has brought this information out, I don't know that they'll be able to actually maintain that case that I was involved with. I was able to get jurisdiction, get kicked free because he had no jurisdiction over it. Anyway, though, so enough of good. He's not. Anyway, so this last thing here is this guy. I think his name is Charlie Freaks. Carrie Cassidy's pimping him. Carrie Cassidy has no discrimination. She's totally non-technical, okay? She doesn't understand computer code. She doesn't understand electricity. She doesn't understand radio waves or any of this kind of stuff. She has no technical knowledge. And she's supporting this guy, pimping him out. This guy is claiming that 5G towers have been turned into 432 hertz broadcast units by Trump and the Q team, okay? And so this is technically not feasible. There would be no point to this. Cell phones don't operate at this frequency. 5G is a very, 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 very rapid frequency. Thousands of vibrations per second, right? And this is 432 vibrations per minute. Or per second. So the difference is like, you know, that versus this. And the machinery cannot do that, no matter what. The machinery can't do that. No matter what software you put behind the 5G tower, you cannot make it produce 432 hertz vibrations. The chips just won't operate that low. And so this is a freaky thing for old Freak to say. No basis in fact or any of that. So this is, I think he's another one of these disinfo guys. And there's a lot of them out there that are paid, right? So they're paid to be disinfo guys. So anybody pimping flat earth is paid to do so, or the majority of them are paid to do so by these, who the fuck knows anymore. I know it came out of the E-ring in the DOD in the fifth level. I know factually that that's the group that came up with the flat earth meme and put it out. Who's paying for it at this point? I don't know, but they are indeed still doing so. Anyway, guys, that's it. I got to do my big clean. I got to keep up on that. And I'll listen to some more shit. Maybe I'll do another video next week on all the other crap I'm listening to that makes no sense. But, you know, you got to watch out for your assumptions about anything. I'm wrong all the time. My assumptions get me into trouble. I got to go back and redo stuff and this sort of thing. But over time, you get to the point where you have fewer and fewer assumptions that have yet to be tested. They haven't been cleaned, right? That haven't been cleaned. So I've cleaned a lot of my assumptions, made the connections, made sure they were valid. You know, that sort of a deal. You have to do that continuously. So you're constantly educating now that we're into the overwoo, now that the paradigm has fallen apart, and we're having to rebuild everything, rebuild science, rebuild academia, all of that. And so in that sense, it's going to be a lot of interesting work over the next couple of hundred years for everybody. I think that's about it. There's a lot more I can talk about, but it would just take up time and not necessarily add anything to today. You know, be healthy, keep your immune systems up. And, you know, we got to stop these bastards doing viral things, but they're really only tuning viruses to affect the weaker among us. So we need to get ourselves really seriously healthy and stop all the vaccines and so on. Anyway.